Make yourselves comfortable.
That's right. Pull up a chair.
Oh, pull up. I must.
What's going on, sports fans, and welcome back to another episode of Insights from the Locker Room. I am your most gracious host, Derek Bone Crusher Dennis, back in the building. Got a great, fun episode for you guys today. I got to sit down with two really good dudes, two former teammates of mine with the Calgary Stampeders in the CFL, Mike Rose and Derek Wiggin, both young, promising defensive tackles in the CFL. Climbing their way up the charts, man. Those guys are great talents, great people. It was a fun conversation to sit down. I didn't even know Derek was going to be there. I initially intended to speak to Mike. They happened to be together, so it was fun. Especially for Wiggo, because Wiggo's a Canadian player. Mike's an American player. So you got two different perspectives on a lot of topics that we talked about. We talked about what the CFL could do, how those guys felt about opting out, how those guys felt about the whole situation of how it was handled this 2020 year, calendar year. I'll just say that. I won't just say the season, but to say the whole 2020 calendar year, how it was handled for them. What was their approach? What was their mindsets? And we also talk about some NBA ball. Wiggin, Toronto, GTA guy, big Raptors fan. So I got to state, me and him got to talk back and forth. I state my piece on why I think the Raptors are going to lose to the Celtics. Series is now tied 2-2, but when we recorded this, Celtics were up 2-0. And it's crazy. They were one shot away from possibly being 3-0, 3-1, or 4-0 being a sweep. But now the series is tied 2-2. So I said, you'll hear what I said when I talked to Wiggin. But I definitely said that if the series didn't go to 7 games, I would be stunned. All right. I know the Raptors are a good team. But do I still think they're going to lose the series? Yes. For two reasons. One, Kemba Walker. Yes. New York City native. New York Gaucho native. Played for the same AU team. Rice High School native. I almost went to Rice High School. Decided not to go to Rice. I was about to go to a bunch of high schools. But yeah, me and Kemba probably would have been teammates in high school. But I decided against that. But yeah. Know him really well. Same circle. Got a lot of the same friends. Grew up playing ball in the same areas. Same tournaments. That's my dude, man. I got a chance to get real close to him when I was in Charlotte playing for the Panthers. He was a longtime Charlotte Hornet player. So, we automatically clicked. You know, we got a lot of the same backgrounds, know a lot of the same people, play for a lot of the same coaches. So, I'm rooting for my boy to win the NBA championship. That is where my loyalty comes from when it comes to, because I hate Boston teams with a passion, even though I am a former Patriot player, but I hate anything Boston. I'm a real New Yorker. Die hard, hardcore New Yorker. I do not like anything to do with Boston. I hate the Red Sox. I love the Patriots. They gave me a chance to be in the NFL, but I hate them when I'm not on the team. So I hate them as a fan. But yes, hate the Pats. Hate the Bruins. Hate the, what other basketball? Celtics, yes, I hate the Celtics because I'm a Knicks fan as well. Super huge New York Knicks fan. I don't care what y'all say. Yes, I know the Knicks suck. We have a terrible owner. We don't have any superstars. No one wants to come to New York, but still is the most expensive franchise in the NBA and is still the number one media market in the U.S. and by a long margin, the greatest city in the world, all right? That is my opinion of New York, born and raised, man. Everything I do is New York. I don't live in New York no more, but I'm like any other New Yorker. I'm quick to let you know where I'm from. But just to get off that tangent, back to this episode. Got to sit down with Mike. Got to sit down with Derek. Talk a lot of things. I also got Derek's perspective on Canadian football landscape as a whole. You know, what could be done better, what could the CFL do better to kind of help build the fan base, all that type of stuff. It's a fun episode. Had a long talk with Mike and Derek. Great stuff in the interview. We also talked about the last episode, me and Vernon Adams sat down, talked about top 7 D tackles, got to get their perspective because they both play the position and they watch a lot of the film, so they know a little more than maybe VA does or maybe I do just from being on the other side. Those guys play the position, so I got their input on that. And yeah, like I said, fun episode. Hope you guys enjoy. Not going to take up too much of your time, so let's get into the next segment.
Mama, there goes that man.
Got a fun episode for you guys today. I'm joined by not one, but two Calgary Stampeders defensive tackles in Mike Rose and Derek Wiggin. Derek Wiggin is Canadian defensive tackle from Queen's University. Mike Rose, American defensive tackle from North Carolina State University. Go Wolfpack. Boys, what's going on, fellas? How y'all feeling, man?
What's happening, son? What's going on?
Hey, what's going on, my boy? So what's life like for the two of y'all right now? Kind of just break it down. What's been going on since 2019 ended?
I would say it was real good. Finally getting a little bit of recognition after, you know, spending 2 years waiting on an opportunity. You know, got a little money in my pocket, thinking I'm about to go crazy and get some more money the next year. And then COVID said, nah.
Right. What about you, Wiggo? What you been up to, man?
Been good. Like, I started off the off season, signed a new deal in December, then went to Scottsdale to go train, then came back to Calgary.
Oh, he was out here in the heat.
Back to Calgary just to chill. Then, I went back to Toronto. I was, going to stay with my parents for, 2 months and come back, get ready for camp. And then, you know, COVID hit. Then, you know, have to pivot, have to make new plans and adjust.
The smartest CFL player ever. Right. Man stayed with his parents in the offseason.
Oh, of course. Listen, if I was still in my mid-20s and was doing what I was doing, I'd be doing the same thing. But I'm a little older and I got kids in the family, so I got to push a little. Oh, speaking of kids, congratulations, Mike, on the new baby boy. Yeah, if I'm correct,
little Cotto Jr. You're getting on my nerves. But yeah, it's my dog.
Yeah, man. What's that like? What's the early stages of fatherhood like for you so far,
well,
man?
You just gotta get. You know, I was used to not sleeping for football, but it's a different type of not sleeping. Yeah, so it's
way. Oh yeah, different.
You know, he needs me in a different way than anybody else have. So of course, I'd do anything for him. But the biggest part is just, you know, you love something that you never met. You know, you just love somebody that you've known for. I know him for 3 months, and I feel like I've known him my whole life.
Right. I'm with you right there. I just had a baby girl 3 months ago as well, so I got two. Yeah, appreciate that, boy. I got two now, so I got my son will be 3 in October, and then I got a couple month old baby girl, so. I'm going to take a little hiatus from the children for a while.
Hey, kudos to you guys, man. I'm nowhere ready for that.
Hey, man. Hey, Wiggs, enjoy yourself, brother. Enjoy yourself. So let's get into a little bit about the football since we obviously know now that 2020 season was canceled. Just kind of break it down for me where you guys' mindset has been all offseason and what were you feeling during the whole process?
Yeah. Well, I'll say for mine. So, when the word came out, what I assume is end of March, April, that the start of the season was going to be delayed. So my mindset was okay. I was pretty optimistic. I thought we were going to play. So basically, my trainer and myself, we got together. Okay, at the end of July, we're going to mindset. We're going to do 2 days. We're going to train hard to the end of July. We should hear something by then. So when that deadline came and went, is like, okay, maybe it's time to start pivot to think about a plan B. And so when the official announcement was, I wasn't surprised. I was ready. I had to start kind of looking for about life after football or getting starting to figure out what I was going to do for the rest of the year if the season didn't go. So I felt fairly prepared when the decision came out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What about you, Mike?
I remember I called you because I was not. I honestly wasn't paying attention, you know, because I was like, oh, this all figure itself out, you know. But when it didn't figure itself out, I got to the point where I was like, I already had a job by the end of March. Because I was like, you know what? I'm just going to beat y'all to the punch because I really don't believe, you know, in the upper echelon people in this league just because I feel like they've mishandled so many things beforehand and that this big of a deal is going to get super mishandled. And, I mean, you know, you hate being right in those situations. I would have rather been extra wrong. But, no, I was not only right, I was extra right. you hit me up to some game. You know, but at the end of the day, I mean, you know, it might have saved the league that we didn't play, you know. So it might have done better for us, not so.
I think so.
I mean, hell, as long as they have a league next year, I can play and they don't mess with my money too much. We'd be all right.
All right, well, speaking on that and segueing into that, now they've given guys the opportunity to opt out. I thought the original deadline was tomorrow, but I've heard that they extended it. Did the thought of opting out of your contract ever cross either one of your minds?
yeah, but... I mean, I'm 28. If I was a younger cat, you know, 20, 24, 25, fresh out of college, or if I'm on a rookie deal, I would have opted out.
Right.
100%, because I'm on a rookie deal in the CFL, don't matter anyway. That's how I look at it. If there's interest,
right,
100%. You know, but if I was younger, well, I don't see the point in not opting out. I mean, you wasn't going to get none of the money anyway. So, the CEWS. Right. And I think a lot of guys like Wynn and a few other guys are getting workouts, but I feel like, you know, there are some guys who probably shouldn't have opted out just to opt out. But
yeah, for so sure.
It's a double-edged sword.
I think it's kind of what you said. A lot of the guys that I see opting out are guys who haven't even played in the league yet, or rookies that probably signed a deal, trying to just play football to get some film, hoping they could jump back to NFL. And when they realize it wasn't no season and they're not getting any money, they just figure, what's the point of me staying under contract? I might as well just opt out and try to see if I can get back on in the league. Or possibly, if the XFL gets jumping in the spring, some guys maybe think about trying to do that.
That might be the move. I mean, you an older vet, so I mean, I guess I'm looking at it as we're getting to a point where, you know, I feel comfortable in the CFL. If the NFL, if I had a legit shot, I would have went. But now being a little older, I need some more definiteness. I need some more guarantees. I'm not going to leave for a potential workout. That ain't me.
Well, that's the talk, too, also, is that CFL contracts, essentially, there's no guarantees. So I'm only speaking on my own self and my what I went through. See, even what I'm going through now, basically, I was told, like, we're going to have to pay someone who's probably just as good as you and younger and cheaper, instead of paying you, who's a proven veteran, the money that you're commanding or demanding. Instead of giving you that, I'm just going to give this rookie. Hopefully, he's going to do what I know he could do and probably turn out. You know what I'm saying? I believe in my coach. I believe in the players. So that's why I had to go the XFL route, because I was basically, everybody in CFL was basically telling me, like, nah, I don't want to spend money on an O-lineman. So I was like, damn, the only way I could play football was go to the XFL. That's the only reason why I went. It wasn't like a planned thing. It was kind of like, that was like a last second plan B. And XFL was just like, hell yeah. It was like, player your caliber, we love to have you to help with the notoriety of the league. I got a chance to go back home.
But I don't see why the CFL and XFL don't work together, to be honest. To me?
I mean, honestly, I think it could, but it's going to be a competition because, again, they all go for the same talent pool. But, I mean, in my sense, that was my argument too, kind of. I mean, if you kind of know the history of football in North America, CFL has been around longer than any other league. Mm-hmm. I think the CFL should have, when the NFL and the AFL were separate and it was like two different U.S. leagues, I think the CFL should have merged back then, because they probably would have leapfrogged the NFL and probably been the biggest league in the world, and probably would have forced the NFL to join, and they would have actually been like a world football league, kind of like how the other NBA and the NHL is, where you got teams in the U.S. and Canada, but it's one league. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I think that could have been... That could have happened, but Canadians have so much pride in the Canadian game and being three downs and being different and stuff.
Yeah, I still think you could have like the two different sets of rules, but still be like one league. There's a lot of smart people out there. It's just, I feel it's more like from a stubborn fan. I think there's a way.
A lot of pride.
A lot of pride.
Especially on the CFL side, there's a lot of pride that goes on, because I definitely think that the CFL and the XFL should work together. Like, why would you not try to do just a home and away, even if it's a little preseason thing? Why not? That would be great for both leagues, because you're not playing, no offense, like, you're not going up against, like, prefer the big NFL talent. Then you're going against the same people who would be in the CFL, if you want to look at it that way.
I mean, you got the top 1%ers. I mean, the Yannick Ngakwe's and the Nell Hunters, you know what I'm saying? Like, you got those guys, but that's not the entire league. The rest of the league is made up of essentially the same dudes who are playing in the CFL or any other.
I'm saying from a regular person's standpoint, they don't know that. They think that every guy on the NFL
roster
is cold. Yeah,
they think they're elite.
Which, to an extent, sure, to get this far in the game of football and play a game for money, yes, you're good.
Yeah, you got to be doing something. You got to be doing something good. But it's mostly have to deal with stuff on the field. I mean, Mike, you've been in the NFL camp. You know how political it is, man. It ain't always about how talented you are. There's a whole lot of, well, I coached this kid in college, or my buddy coached this kid in college, so I'm going to keep him because he played for somebody that kind of believes in my philosophies and that type of stuff. So it's the same. It happens in the CFL, too. Yeah, it happens in the CFL, too, man. So it's just super political. I always tell people football is a very political sport, and it's not always about talent. It's always about connections just as much as talent. Yeah, you're right on that. But let's talk about something a little other than, you know, the football grind and stuff. Let's get to what's going on right now in the world. Have you guys been watching the NBA? You know, since the bubble started.
I'm watching the game today.
Which one?
Today, Denver.
Denver Jazz.
Denver. Yeah, I watched the Clippers game and I watched the Raptors Celtics game. Yeah. I don't think the Raptors are going to repeat ways. I'm sorry.
I believe we could get past Boston.
I don't know, man. Boston is
like
deep.
We didn't play well today.
Hey, but you got to listen. Yeah, but check this out. Boston essentially has three all-stars, even though Jaylen Brown wasn't an all-star. He's pretty much been playing like he cold. And on top of that, their role players are very good. Like Marcus Smart is a very good role player. I mean, granted, Toronto has a good team as well. I'm not disregarding Toronto. But my honest opinion is I think what messed Toronto up is that Brooklyn wasn't a great starting round test to get them ready for a deep playoff run because Brooklyn didn't have any of their stars. They didn't even have the secondary stars. Spencer Dinwiddie didn't come. They have DeAndre Jordan. They didn't have Kevin Durant. They have Kyrie. So they were pretty much playing against Brooklyn's entire bench. Fair. So them winning those games and blowing that team out, I mean, I don't think that was a good opening round test as opposed to, like, you see what the Clippers had to go through with Dallas or, you know what other teams kind of losing a game or two. I mean, when you get a sweep, especially when you get extended time of rest, I think Boston had a better first round test than Toronto, and I think they're a little more prepared to play a better team. But I just think, like, I mean, matchup wise, it's a good matchup. But I just think, like, Tatum is different, bro.
That's fair. But I would say, just like, no, that's game one. No, I'm not surprised to see them lose a game one. Like, just based.
Why does everybody keep saying that?
I would say
history, I guess.
It's history. Like, even last year, we lost game one to Orlando.
Yeah.
The Bucks last in Eastern Conference, we lost first two games. So, like, it's never, like, we're used to being, like, in, like, we're maybe down game one. And then, like, you know, we rebound after that. Like, I'm not, like, Boston's going to be tough. Boston's going to be incredible tough. But I think, it's Boston's just, like, tough. Like, we didn't have a good game one.
Man, Jaylen Brown cold, man. I'm just saying,
I know he's cooking, but I'm just saying, I believe it'll be better in, like, the rest of the series. You just had to get that one game just out of the system.
I definitely think that Toronto has some of the best role playing. They play some of the best team basketball in the NBA. It's just – Boston plays team basketball, but they got stars playing team basketball.
Yeah, that's going to be the big thing. It's right. Like guys like Siakam and OG, Fred, like they got to play up to be consistent 20-point guys a game. Yeah,
they have to but Kawhi was the pushover because here was my argument. Dwayne Casey was coach of the year in the NBA. It's not like you guys had a bad coach before Nick Nurse. Dwayne Casey was a good coach. He actually had the second best record in the NBA when he won coach of the year, and they still caught a second round exit. And you had a good player in like a DeMar DeRozan or whatever. Siakam was on that team, even though he's not the Siakam that he is now. But the roster is not that much different from what it used to be. And Toronto's always been a really good team, especially in the regular season. They've always been a good team. My thing is, Kawhi was the X factor that led y'all to a ring last year. Everyone knows that because it's the same team it was before he got there, and he was the X factor that kind of helped push it over the hill. Now, granted, yes, they do have championship experience from last year, but I don't look at Kyle Lowry. I don't look at Siakam. I don't look at Van Fleet or fucking Powell as like guys who you like, damn, you gotta watch that dude. Like, to me, Boston, just their star power is just a little stronger. Like, I think Kemba's better than Kyle Lowry.
Yeah, because NBA players
Tatum, star power. I think Tatum and Siakam is a toss up. Yeah, it is. That's all it is right now. And it's about guys.
Yeah.
Guys that win one on one matches, especially when you get to the playoffs, because a lot of those playoff games are going to be like, you see what Luka did. It's going to be like, all right, sometimes you just got to put the ball in your star player hands and tell them go win you the game. I don't think Toronto got somebody like that.
No, it's going to be a really big test to see like is the like the role guys roles and going beyond their roles, because I feel like the big turning point for us last year was that Philly series where Kawhi was basically everything that whole series. Then after that series, like in the past without Kawhi, that type of series we lose. Dwayne Casey was a good coach, but we struggled in certain playoff matches. Even like
LeBron was the killer for y'all every year.
Like we lost
John Wall,
like Wong. So like we couldn't get past Cleveland, and LeBron, but it's still we lose to the Nets, Brooklyn, or we'll lose to Washington. Like those were the series where you could see like the cracks of what like the foundation. Just like when we played LeBron, that's what really was like. Yeah, right. We have to shake it up.
The Nets gonna be hard next year. I just want to throw that out there. The Nets gonna be hard.
I think so. If they figure out how to mesh everybody into a good system, the Nets is dangerous.
Katie, Kyrie, young boy out there too. They got point guard for the Nets.
Oh, LeVert,
Karis.
Oh,
Karis. I like Karis.
LeVert.
I think the one thing with the Nets is just like
Karis.
I think after Kyrie and KD, it's like you got to get other guys just to buy in. Okay, you're not gonna get the ball that much. Those two are having the ball.
No, to be honest, no, because I honestly think. I mean, DeAndre, all he has to do is play defense and rebound. Dinwiddie got to give you a solid 15-20. That's it. And Caris LeVert, all he got to do is give you a solid. If you could get Caris and Dinwiddie to give you at least 15 a game, and you let Kyrie and KD do their thing, and you got DeAndre who's, you know what I'm saying, you got DeAndre and you got the other dude with the afro, I forgot his name. But, yes. Those are two solid big men right there to build around. Like, they have a good roster. The only question is, are they going to mesh well? Is Kyrie going to come and fuck up the chemistry like he did everywhere else? Or is it going to work? You know what I'm saying? Like,
KD going to be the one to be like, hey, Kyrie, just goddamn calm down, bro.
He got to. I mean, Kyrie has to take a backseat to KD. That's going to be the thing. Is he going to be willing to take... Is he going to be willing to do it, though?
That's star power. I'm sorry. There's stars. Kyrie's a
hey, man.
He's a bona fide ball player. But we talking about Kevin Durant.
Yeah. You're right. Kevin Durant, generational.
You're not going to see another 7-footer like that again. It's not going to happen.
Nah, you're not. You're not. You're absolutely right. He might be the greatest scorer to ever play in the NBA.
You better pass that man the ball.
So on another note, I mean, I know y'all heard the news, my man, Wakanda Forever, my man, Chadwick Boseman passing away, man. How y'all feeling
been
about
such
that?
A crazy year, man. Like, it's just you like don't, like he just it's kind of he just kept it quiet, like you know, just kept just you know, just kind of like it's like wow, like I thought like I got an email that he. Like he died. I thought like it just the email, like you know, the, like does show the full email on your screen. So it's like Chadwick Boseman dies of I'm like, they got corona, but I saw he had cancer. I'm like, damn, like
that's what I thought.
And then just that's what through, I thought. Like what like the roles he's played. He played Jackie Robinson. I think he played James Brown as well.
Yep.
Like and just like. And
being
Black Panther is just like wow, this guy played a lot of just like iconic roles, and it's sad to lose someone like that. But it's just you know, 2020 has been such a you can't describe how crazy this year's been.
Nah, for sure, you know.
Man. I mean, I knew 2020 was going downhill when we lost Kobe.
Tough. Shout out to Chadwick. That was tough. South Carolina legend, man. Shout out to him, man, because, you know, don't know actors come from South Carolina, so he definitely did his thing for a place that don't got too many people doing big stuff.
Right, man. Just hearing all the good stuff about him and seeing, like, what he did. I mean, the thing that he was shooting action movies, man, while he was doing chemo and surgeries, it just shows you, like, that take a special type of dude to be able to do something like that.
And especially, like, the way today's world is, where, like, it seems like anyone could find any type of information, like no one knew.
Right, no one knew. He kept that under wraps. No one knew.
He got some good
people. That's crazy. He got some great people around him.
And front page news, Black Panther has cancer. But I definitely think that black people need to take that into account, that this man died. Don't let his legacy go to waste. You know what I'm saying? Like, get more black actors, man. Some kids, man, use that as motivation, man. Keep Black Panther going, man. Let's keep stuff like that still moving. Don't give up on it just because it's an iconic role. We get that. But we can't be like, oh, only Chadwick can be Black Panther. We need to keep those roles going.
So let's talk a little bit about your football backgrounds and kind of, you know, youth football and stuff like that. I'm going to start with you, Mike. Mike, just kind of give a synopsis of you know, your journey through high school, because you said you grew up in South Carolina. So I know in the South they play, you know, football is next to God. So
right.
So yeah, what was it like, you know, growing up in South Carolina playing football, and, you know, what kind of led to your progression to ultimately get a scholarship to NC State?
I had played football way before that. But I was playing tackle football in the yard with my cousins and my friends. And then, you know, one day I saw my friends was like, man, we're going about to play tackle. So, you know, my uncle signed me up. And, you know, I wanted to be a running back. You know, Barry Sanders was my guy. So I thought, you know, I was a little skinny kid. Man, my coach was like, you're going to be a quarterback. You can do all the same things Barry Sanders did. Just run the ball. So I ain't gonna lie to you, I probably didn't throw the ball till the third game. So I ran the ball here and play. But we was winning, so I didn't care. You know what you do in youth football, you put your biggest, the strongest kid, tell him run to the outside. That's just how most of us got our start. And then that's what happened. It. And then, you that's know, it. Where I'm from, you know, they take football pretty serious. So, you know, my Uncle Thomas, well, I need you to do this, this, and this so I can get this bread player, which, hey, I don't care what nobody said. That might be one of the funny things in the world. We see grown men betting on little kids. Serious funny thing in the world. I grew up in a really small place, you know, and then went to a really small high school, but we played big teams like Gaffney, Burns High School. I don't know if y'all ever heard of Burns, with Marcus Lattimore. Dorman High School, where Sharon Pete came from, Rock Hill, where Jadavian Clowney came from. We played a very good schedule every year. So I saw more talent than a lot of people did quick. And the reason so the team I was on in high school was trash. We were horrible. You know, I'm not going to lie, I was about as good as a quarterback as I would be as a kicker. But, you know, when I got there, the culture started to change. You know, now we started winning a little bit. But, you know, Burns High School was like number 5 or 10 in the entire nation. And, you know, they had Marcus Lattimore. For people who don't know, Marcus Lattimore was God at the time. He was running backs at the time.
Yeah.
And he was like, he had to be a senior. I was like freshman or sophomore. And, you know, I think Dabo Sweeney was in attendance. Tom O'Brien from NC State. Steve Spurrier was in attendance. I mean, the man had them all. Mush Champ was there.
Yeah, in the crowd.
Nick Saban, but I think it was the defense. Of course, everybody was out there watching him. They had their own little area on the track watching. And he, you know, he was the man.
Right.
So, you know, we was getting crumped. My coach told him before the game, he told all of us, Saturday night's playing outside linebacker. He was like, hey, I don't care what nobody says. I don't care what anybody say. I don't care how good he is. He got to go to the ground. Anybody else can beat us. So, now, every year before, they beat us like 40, 50, 40. But that one particular year, we had them down at halftime, 9-0. We was crunk. We was talking trash to Mark. We was busting them down. And this is where my scholarship came from, actually. Marcus Lattimore came through the B gap. I was apexed outside on one number two. I saw him and I put him to sleep. And that's how I got my scholarship. I cannot, that's just how it happened.
Yeah, Mike.
That was the hardest hit I've had in a long time. And I knocked Marcus.
Man, I gotta feel good. I gotta feel good being a sophomore laying the wood callers on the scene.
I knew Marcus had power. It was the next day my football locker had 10 letters in it. Just, hey, would you like to go on a sophomore? Man, it was crazy. He had star power. Now, to finish that story about that game, he had 21 rushing yards on like 17 attempts. He ended the game with 230 yards.
Ooh.
Rushing.
No way. And one day, he must have went off in one quarter.
We remember we was up 9-0. It was like 35-9, bro. We lost our thumb.
Yeah.
I don't know what his coach said to him, but they started running these sweeps.
Man, yeah, it turned them up.
It was over for the kids. The dream.
It was over. It was over after that. Hey, man.
And, you know, I was still playing linebacker my first year. I redshirted because I went to college at 200 pounds. I was a little light, you know, in the country. In the country, so I'm country strong, but I wasn't weight room strong.
So weight room strong.
You have a weight
room. Right, right.
So I went up there to state, man. I got a little bigger, and coach was like, hey, man, if it's play action and you blitz the quarterback again, I'll move you to DN. I accidentally made that mistake. I've been playing DN ever since. So it definitely was the right decision to move to D-line, man, and it's worked out. I wish somebody would have told me to move to D-tackle a long time ago. I'd probably be making some bread. But
if you had more time to get acclimated.
That's my football journey, man.
Yeah. What about you, Riggo? How did you get your start in the football, especially you being a Canadian kid?
Oh, man. Basically, I got into this private school. I went to private school in Toronto, born and raised in Toronto.
Big money.
So, gone to private school, I got in based off grades. I wasn't really, I played sports, but it was just based off grades. And, this is going into my grade 8 year. They had a basketball camp there. I thought at the time I was 6 foot 200 pounds in grade 8. I thought at the time I was going to be at least 6'5", 6'6". As you've seen me, I didn't grow. I just got wider. One of the coaches there is asking, so what y'all do for fun, when you're with your friends? I'm like, yeah, I play touch football in the park. And he's like, oh, we have this community football team. If you want, come join the team. So I asked my parents. My parents were like, yeah, sure, why not? And that kind of what started my football journey. So in Canada, hockey's king. Hockey will always be king, and everything else flows after that.
Right.
Especially in Toronto, it doesn't matter how bad the Leafs are. They're always going to have all the support. But for every other sport, you have to be kind of good before, you get people get on the bandwagon. So it was basically didn't even really know too much about the CFL at that time. But as I kept playing football, I kept getting a little better. I already had the size. It's just from there, just learning more the skills and stuff like that. I started as an outside linebacker, and I played defensive end. So the funny thing for us, dating kids, all of us, we didn't even want to play in the Canadian university ball. We all want to go down south. Try to get scholarships. My grade 11 year, I went to about 2-3 different football camps. I went to Brown University. I think I went to Harvard as well. They had a camp too, but it was just. Yeah,
in the Ivy League schools, though.
I went on the visit to Michigan State in my grade 12 year. All about going down south, but it didn't really materialize for me. So just kind of okay, I guess I'm going to CIS, Canadian University. So I ended up going to Queen's University, And it's just really just kind of like, yeah, it's just like, it just the same thing. I just kept playing. Like I played my first year there and just kind of kept getting better. And really the CFL didn't really truly become an option until my junior year. We have like so in Canada, okay, there's like a junior. Yeah.
The East West game, right?
So it's like our, yeah. It's called like the East West Bowl. So it's like the junior, like for juniors, like all-star game for juniors. So played in that, did pretty well. Like mm-hmm. I got my name in, and then going into my senior year, I was like on one of the top 15 prospects. Going into my senior year was finished the year all Canadian. So equivalent to your all American. And, so I had a really good year, but for some reason, I just kept falling down the prospect ranking charts. So, like, granted, and once I got to the combine, like, really, I got no media attention. Like, I was just, like, I'm not the best. I'm a football player. I don't look great in gym shorts. Or, like, I'm not an underwear.
Yeah, but that's normally the.
So I was just solid and, like.
But those are always the best football players.
So. When I got my first interview at the combine was Calgary. I funny story. I got there like 10 minutes early for the interview, so I had an extra 10 minutes with them. So I guess that's so they got to know me pretty well. So when I get drafted by them, I get drafted in the fourth round, and like draft day, I like both you guys have experienced it. You're just seeing names go off before you're like, really, that trash. And like I get to Calgary, they put me at nose tackle. I'm like, I've played D tackle in playoff games just to pass rush, but not like nose tackle full time. So that first year was like awakening to pro football. I was 250 and I was just like, I'm playing nose tackle, taking double teams from Berg and Brett Jones. I'm just like, oh, this is like, I don't know if this football stuff's for me. Like, this is like, I'm used to being on the edge.
Hey, you look like going for the edge, going inside.
Yeah.
Going inside.
So I didn't make the team that first year. So pretty much just had to like make that decision like, okay, like, is football what I really want to do? And answered it, yeah. So it's like now it's like get the process. Okay, how do I make this team? So from between that first camp to my second camp, so in Canada we're allowed to go back to school for our fit. So if we don't make the CFL, or if you have never eligibility, so I went back to Queens, got like played D tackle full time. Then from once our season was done till training camp started, I was just training, just like got my weight up to 270. So I was more ready for the rigors of playing inside and playing against men.
Right.
So made the team and been in Calgary ever since.
So Wiggo, let me ask you this, because this is always a hot topic on Twitter that I get into with fans. What is your thoughts on like the culture of Canadian football and how like what could be done to kind of target kids in the grassroots area to kind of get off that hockey is king thing and try to push more kids to play the game? Because I always hear people complain about Canadians and their development and them wanting to be in the CFL and all this type of stuff. So you just kind of confirmed it for me, because I heard a kid tell me like, oh, I've been growing up wanting to play in the CFL. And you told me like, no, none of us thought that way. We all were trying to get down south. So what do you think could be done in terms of like what the CFL can do as a league and what can be done for football as a whole in Canada to kind of help change that culture?
Like, it's kind of like you kind of know it's like hockey's gonna have that top spot, but there's room for like other sports. Like, granted, we don't have the same amount of people as like the States does, but there's still enough. I think what the CFL can do better is like market like the CIS, the guys that come from the CIS. Like, I played with so many dudes, played against dudes. In university, that they may not play anymore, but they work in Toronto, they work in Vancouver, they work in Montreal, they work in all these major cities. It's just like they'll come, like if they played against me or like they played with me, if I'm in their city, they'll come watch me play. So that's with a whole bunch of other CIS dudes. It's just like promote like the CIS and like guys that came from the CIS more. Like, you could still promote the American players, but it's like in those cities, like especially in cities like Toronto, Vancouver, where like the like attendance and like interest is kind of like shaky. Like, promote those CIS guys, because like there's a lot of dudes or a lot of people or like a lot of people that know a CFL player. If you don't promote that guy's in the league, like, they're not gonna know, like, oh, like, is he still playing anymore?
Right.
So that, I think that's one thing they can do.
Right.
And it's just another thing. It's just like the league just like I'm not a marketing guy, but there's so many things anyone can think of the better ways you can promote the game.
Promote the game. Yeah.
Growing up for me is like, and going back, when I go back to talk to high school kids, I'm like, the NCAA isn't the end-all be-all. Like, you could still play in the CIS and make it as a pro. There's guys, like, look at Tardif with the Chiefs. He went to McGill. Devon Campbell, who's with the LA Chargers. There's a bunch of, even Akeem Hicks went to Regina.
Akeem Hicks.
Brett Jones.
Yeah. I played against that dude in the Shrine Bowl. Yeah, that's exactly. A big motherfucker.
There's guys like that up here. It's not as much as it would be in America, but there's guys like that up here. But they don't get the same shine like that they should if they were if they were from Texas or from any other state. You know, it's
right.
Like that's right. Why I feel like our media, Canadian media, has to do. Like, the CFL could start to push, like college players to look out for, guys who are making noise. It's not just, you don't just pick them out when they make the league, be like, no, this guy's up and coming. You know, you're going to have some misses, but at least if you start like just at least covering that, or at least like making a bigger deal of recruiting and stuff like that. Like, it doesn't like, so at least Canadian kids don't have the look where it's like, oh, I have to go play in the CIS. And it's also got to solve the getting like a Canadian like a Canadian QB in the league. Like, it's still like you got like teams got to pick the best guy, but at least helping that development for a Canadian QB.
Right. Well, I've always heard the argument, especially from kind of like people thinking of a personnel standpoint, how a lot of the coaches and stuff, they feel like they're already pigeonholed with keeping certain Canadian guys that probably they feel like probably are never going to be good enough to play, type of thing. And I granted, there are guys who make it overlooked who probably are good enough to play. But my thing with the league and how to promote it was kind of what the NFL does with like Play 60. But even with Ambrosius doing with CFL 2.0, I feel like he should have did that in Canada first before he tried to go 100%. Do it in other countries. Like, if you would have took that money and you would have did some type of like regional camps or regional combines for high school kids to kind of get them into the league early, get them interested in it, they'll want to watch it. If you could spend that money, I mean, they do it every year for the CFL draft. Do it yearly. Why don't in the spring you get it? You find the top high school kids in Canada and you fly them into Toronto and they go through a camp and they get to beat CFL players and go through drills with CFL players, type of thing, to kind of build an interest in the league with the younger generation, because that's where the CFL's downfall is that the fan base is aging, and it's like the dinosaurs who are on their way out are the ones who are the diehard fans, and the casual young fans are the ones that they're having a hard time with getting interested in, because those kids, like you said, they latch onto the NFL, they latch onto the NCAA, and they completely dismiss CIS, and they completely dismiss the CFL. I think if him spending all that money to do regional combines in Denmark and all in Finland and all that other dumb stuff, if he spent that money and did it in Canada in the spring with high school kids or, you know, with CIS kids, because I guess apparently, I mean, the structure of how it fits, you can still have college eligibility but still find, you know, work in, you know, pro camps. But why don't you make it to where they don't have to go to the actual camp when the season is getting ready to start? Why don't you make camps for them to do in the spring so that way they get, you know, a full springtime, you know, essentially, like, because in the States, in college football, we're pretty much year-round. Like, Mike, you know this. We got spring ball. We got summer ball. We got summer workouts. And yeah, you got summer weights. You got, like, it's year-round when you play NCAA. Like, you don't catch a fucking break. So, I don't understand why they can't do the same thing up in Canada. Like, if my thing is, if you want the league to make money, you gotta, it's like any business, you gotta invest money to make money. You gotta be willing to spend money to make money. But they keep trying to cut corners and be so cheap with everything that it's gonna, it's see, now with the pandemic, it's pretty much exposing the business plan and how weak it was. Like, you can't expect to be cheap and cut corners all this time and think you still got a great business plan and it's going to catch up to you. So I think now the CFL is at a point where they're kind of at a survival or death type of thing. Like, if you don't learn to change with the climate and the landscape and start to adjust, kind of what the NFL does, NFL hasn't stayed the same from the beginning. They learned to grow and change and kind of market and target, you know, the younger crowd, essentially what you saw in the Super Bowl when they opened the Super Bowl. What do you think that was about? That was about targeting young kids.
And that's the one thing. If it's not bread, the NFL will get it. That's why I think it's too much pride.
They're going to spend money.
Like, you got some dinosaurs. Like, no offense. Like, you need to get some younger marketing people in there. And plus, I'm sorry, Canada is extremely diverse to the point that I don't know why. If I was the CFL marketing person, I would have been gotten to the Asian communities, the Jamaican communities. I would have got into those communities, that the places that have a hard time, like Vancouver, Montreal, Toronto. Like, there's more people that go to Laval games than Montreal, the Out West games. Get those people. Right. Give out some free tickets. You ain't using them anyway. Give out some tickets, man. Start a youth. Why is there not a CFL flag football league where they can wear the jerseys of the professional teams? That makes no sense to me.
Like, the crazy thing is, like, NFL 60 is in Canada. It's in, like, NFL. Yeah, it is. Little flag. Like, NFL does,
and
like,
that shouldn't be up here.
Like, even if it,
you know, yeah, it's like, the CFL should have had first dibs at that.
Took that market,
yeah, right.
The money he was talking about and put it into it.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. That's what I think they should have done. They should have did like how NFL uses play 60 to keep young kids interested into the game, because they don't want, you know, they don't want to die out. They don't want people to forget about, you know, the game. They still want to keep kids interested. I think CFL should have done that a long time ago. They just kind of missed the mark on it. But to close out, we talked about this a little bit before we started recording, but last episode I had Vernon Adams, quarterback, Marshall West on here talking about top 7 CFL defensive tackles. So I wanted to get you guys input because you two guys played a position. So in your opinion, who do you think, how did you feel about the rankings, first of all, and what is your opinion on the whole landscape of who the top CFL DTs
are? Well, I'll say this. I don't ask a carpenter to do a rocket scientist job and vice versa. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, so I would say this. While I respect his opinion, you know, I do disagree. You know, everybody on that list is hard, you know. But if we're going off just that season, you know, I definitely would have had Mike Moore on my list. I definitely would have – man, I ain't gonna put myself on there, but I'm not him, you know, but – I mean, there were some guys on his own team. Like, I like Woody Barron from.
Yeah, I mentioned Woody Barron. Woody
Barron fan. I mean, there's some great defensive linemen in this league, actually. You know that. I mean, but I think if we're talking about top, what he did, 7?
Yeah, he did 7.
My top 7 right now, after last year's performance, it's going to be Mondo, just because Mondo just do it every year. Mondo do it every year.
Yeah.
Dylan Wynn had a great year.
Yeah.
Mike Moore, number 3. Cleon, 4. I put myself at 5 because I think I came in strong. And then 6 and 7, I'm going to go Mike and then Big Wigs. That's
my list. Okay. That's your list. What about you, Wiggo?
For me, I don't get too caught up in lists. I'm more of a guy like... you guys know me. I'm like, I'm just like, let me just focus on the team, focus on my job. But like, pretty similar list. Like, you know, there's a lot of great, like, really good DTs in the league. So
fire. There's some fire. There's some young guys too.
Up and coming young guys. So, you know, like, I'm a fan of a lot of guys, different games. But for me, I just go out, do my job.
Yeah.
No, as long as the check's right.
All
right,
Wiggs, I love you, but this is insights from the locker room, man. I don't want to hear that political talk, man. I want you to keep it real.
He, He just I want gave you to keep it real. Social media prep course.
Yeah. But pretty much, he just kept that so political. Like, listen, John, John is fine. Yeah, give me. All right, so you know what? The Wigs. All right, Wigs. Wait, Wigs.
Okay, I'll get Wigs.
Wigs. Listen to me. I'm not even gonna make it an overall. You give me a top five Canadian D tackle right now.
Canadian. Ooh, that's
yeah. Know. Just Canadian.
Okay, Cleon's number one.
Okay.
Cleon. I'm gonna put in. I'm gonna put Ted for the legacy.
Big two. Big Ted.
Ted. Big Ted. Okay. Yeah, Mike didn't even put Ted on his list. Damn.
Ted. Okay. No, I love Ted's game, but Ted, to me,
yeah.
I feel like if I'm going off last year, because Ted was just a little bit injured last year. That's all that really is. Just like, honestly,
yeah,
like
okay.
Mike Johnson, if he hadn't got injured, Micah's stats would be way up. So I'm just going off last year's what you gave me last year.
Yeah, okay. I dig that. I think that's what VA bases it off of. We base it off of guys, how the guys played against Montreal. He didn't base it off of, like, how they played through the whole season. He just based it off of who was in my face all the time when I was trying to throw the ball type of shit. That. So, and then the fact that Mac Henry was on his list, I'm leaving it at that. Mac is my dude. Refresh out. But go ahead, Wiggs. You gave me Cleon one. You gave me Ted two.
I'll put myself at three.
Two, three.
Myself at three.
I think I like it.
I feel that's fair. I had a good year. Like I feel like I've been improving every year. I feel like I'm a force.
Man, you inside. Gotta prove yourself. This year six.
You ain't gotta. Yeah. Man, you don't gotta sell yourself. The film talks for itself.
The film talks. So. I'm gonna put Jake Thomas, man.
Jake the Snake.
Yeah, Jake.
Jake
just produces like
Jake Haller. I like Jake.
Yeah, Jake is solid. Jake is solid.
I'm gonna put tied for fifth, Latanzio in Ottawa and Mac Henry.
Okay.
Hold on, you forgetting somebody?
That's hard.
Did I forget somebody?
Who?
Oh, that's a legacy thing there. I was gonna say, oh boy, Saskatchewan, Thomas or whatever his name is.
Zach.
Shit.
Yeah,
last year Zach was pretty non-existent last year though.
But I think he definitely got a hard legacy.
Yeah, in the past, when he was in Ottawa, he was tough.
Oh yeah, he had that.
I don't know.
That spin move was nice.
I give him his just due. But his time and stats has been kind of lackluster. But that could be a part of every time somebody go to Sash, man. I guess they have a hard time keeping the shine on the star.
Only
Hancock himself has been great anywhere you go.
Yeah. I tell you, you know who I also like his game. I know I'm just 96 from Ottawa.
96. Oh, that's Wakefield.
Yeah, I think Wakefield kind of good, man. I like Wakefield.
Yeah, he's straight. He's not bad. Ottawa's scheme, though, is always kind of real. D-lineman, because it's more of a, you got to do, you know, Noel Thorpe has always been one of those DCs where this is how I want my shit to look, and I don't really care what you can do. You got to do it my way. I like Claxton before he retired. I thought Claxton was straight, even though he had a good one,
like the year... The year we played them in the Great Cup, he had a real good year.
My client.
Yeah, man. I think Claxton was straight, but I think he always got a bad rep after he went to Calgary. I know Pat was talking about him like he was a string cheese.
It was one play.
But,
besides that, he was straight, but it was running.
He was coming off a hip.
Yeah, it was one bad play. Yeah. The rest of it was straight, man.
Yeah, man. But I that's a solid list, Wiggs, and I'm glad you put yourself in three. Honestly, if I had to pick a top 10 CFL D tackles, I would put you, Wiggs, around 7-8. You've been solid, man, especially the last couple of years. You've only been getting better and better, and I feel like once you finally got that full starters role and you was full-time, man, it was a couple games last season, bro. Like, we wouldn't have won if you ain't make a couple plays, man.
Hey, man,
you
definitely earned it.
I'll give you that.
Give me an eight, man. Give me a top eight.
I gave my eight when I did it with VA, but I went Mike Moore number one, just because Mike is versatile and he's the best pass rushing D tackle to go outside in the league. He's the best one at it. I put Mike Moore at one. I think I put Dylan Wynn at two. I put Micah at three because we just know what Micah is. Yeah, he had an off year in sacks. It happens. And Micah does face a lot of double and triple teams. Like Micah is a guy where you gotta game plan for him. If you don't game plan for him, he's gonna wreak havoc. So I put him at three just because he had an off year. I said normally most years Micah is gonna be number one, but just based off the last season, I put him at three. Number four, I think I had Mondo. I put Mondo at four just because Mondo's been doing it a long time. But you know what you're gonna get with Mondo. If you play Mondo and you ain't ready for bull rush and club, then your ass wasn't ready to play football that day. So
he's probably the most fun tape to watch.
He definitely probably got some of the best tape.
Oh man!
But you know what I'm saying? I'm tall, so
Mondo is tall. Yeah, but you got to remember too, because Mondo has the leverage. And his power is bar none. Like, there's no one stronger than Mondo. So, he's so damn strong that he don't really have to do anything else because he knows there's not many guys that could battle with him for 60 minutes. Just the honest truth.
I got to give him that.
So, yeah. So, five, I went Ted Laurent just because Ted for me, Ted is fire. But Ted is only good when you piss him off. So, like, you got to be in the game telling Ted that he ain't shit. Or, you know, you got to be talking crazy to Ted for him to be like, all right, I'm going to turn it on. Ted's always been kind of cold, especially, too, when he gets tired, he kind of disappears. That's the always biggest thing, too, with Ted. Like, he got to get his conditioning up because when he gets tired, he kind of disappears. But I put Ted at five. Sixth, I had Woody Barron at six. Yeah, I had Woody Barron at six because I said, when you watch the film, Woody is cold. It's just Montreal, and sometimes he don't make all the plays, but if you watch him on film, like, one-on-one, he cold with it. Like, he gonna win a lot of one-on-one matchups. And I think seven, I put you, Mike.
I appreciate that, man. Just somebody.
Yeah, I put you at seven. Yeah, I put you at seven. Especially because based off of last year, like, technically, you should have had, like, 13 sacks last year. You tricked off a lot of sacks, bro. Like, I don't know, this offseason, I hope you've been working on kind of breaking down it, because you missed a lot of sacks last year. If you had made those sacks, you probably would have been top three in the league, especially in terms of, like, you would have had Dylan Wynn numbers for sure. Yeah, and I think eight would have been a tie for me between Wiggs and I'm trying to think who else. Is there somebody I'm forgetting? Yeah, I think eight. Oh, I'm tripping. I did put Cleon in my top five. I'm tripping. I put Cleon at four. So let me go. I did that the same time too. So it was Mike, it was Dylan, it was Micah, it was Cleon, it was Mondo, it was Ted, and then it was Woody. And then I put you, Wiggs, and who else I'm forgetting? I think that's it. That's it. Nobody else.
I mean, I like it. See, it's better. I like it hearing from an offensive lineman standpoint.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, playing against Calgary is always a tough matchup because, I mean, not to sound crazy, but Mace does a hell of a job coaching motherfuckers up. Like, I haven't seen too many dudes who come and played under Mace and not get better. So, Mace does a hell of a job, and the scheme is A1. I think Monson did a hell of a job going into his first year as a DC. I mean, learn from Clay. I mean, Clay had a hell of a game plan too. As long as I've been in Calgary, the D line has always been fire, and y'all know how to play with each other. That's the thing that I think a lot of people don't understand. It's just not just raw talent. It's just that the camaraderie in that locker room with us all the time was always A1, and everybody always knew how to play with each other and kind of feed off each other, support each other. And I think that's always been a lost concept in other locker rooms. So, that was my top eight. But
I think that's more realistic. You get what I'm saying? Like, there's less bias in yours because it's based off more experience.
Yeah. I'm always come on, you listen. I'm always unbiased for my ratings. I won a goddamn Grey Cup with Bo, and I still say Mike Riley was better. Hey, I'm always unbiased. Hey, Bo was pissed at me for that, for sure. I probably why I'm not in Calgary no more. He probably told Huff get rid of my ass.
That's my dog,
though, man. I love Bo. He's definitely the best quarterback in the league. But I had to be. I gave Mike the edge just because Mike gets fucking killed every.
The thing is too.
Mike is like he's literally the toughest quarterback in the league. Like Mike gets killed.
Oh yeah.
On a daily basis, and he still gets up. And he's still out there. He'll still throw a touchdown on your ass with a 60-yard bomb after you just hit him right under his chin to play before that. So that's why I gave Mike the edge. I talent wise, Bo is the best quarterback in the league in terms of arm strength, Bo like accuracy.
Bo is the Brett Favre of the CFL.
Nah, I'm not gonna give him that. Bo is more. Bo more Tom. We gotta give him. He's the Tom Brady of the CFL, bro. No. He might be a goat.
I like call the Brett Favre. Cause ain't no check down. Oh, ain't no check down, bro.
Nah, no check down. Nah, no check down. No check down. Yeah, if it's less than 10, it's going out of bounds.
Hey, that's a gunslinger.
Hey, listen, you don't get a nickname like the gunslinger for no reason.
Look, yeah, they could be running cover 10 back there. Bogo still throw it past.
Oh yeah, Bogo still. Listen, that was Chris Jones' game plan every time. It was rush 3, drop 9.
I mean, he gonna throw that.
But hey, fellas, yeah. But I appreciate y'all taking the time to come holler at me, man. This was a fun chat. Y'all boys enjoy your weekend. Hopefully, things get right soon in the CFL and y'all boys on the field. Hopefully, I'm out there with y'all. If not, y'all know y'all always got my support, man. Y'all keep doing y'all thing.
Hey, man, I appreciate you, Double D.
Again, shout out to Derek Wiggin and Mike Rose for taking the time to kick it with me here on Insights from the Locker Room. Appreciate those guys. Two young promising DTs. Hopefully things get figured out in the football landscape for all the secondary leagues outside the NFL so these guys can get back to doing what they do best, and that's getting after the quarterback and putting out, you know, quality play for a championship team. Hopefully they get another Grey Cup. Hopefully, like I said, hopefully I get a chance to play against them or play with them again, man. Those are, like, again, two solid dudes, two great dudes, man. And, yeah, that's it for me here on this episode of Insights from the Locker Room. Hope you guys enjoy. Again, like, share, subscribe, and let your friends know. Listen to it with your buddies. I'm trying to get them streaming numbers up, baby. So make sure you, again, like I said, like, share, subscribe. Let all your people know. Follow me, 6BoneCrusher4 on Twitter. 6BoneCrusher3 on Twitter. I'm sorry. 6BoneCrusher4 on Instagram. Or follow me on Twitter at Insights from the Locker Room. Just hit me up. You got any questions, I'm always there to answer anything. I'm a man of the people. Y'all know me. I love the fans. Appreciate everybody who support the show. And again, take care. Enjoy your long holiday weekend. And in the words of my brother, Russell Westbrook.
I'm out.